with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, 18th of February, 2014. Titanic Tuesday on the horn, so named for the Titanic intellect, obviously and frequently on display from the right wing in this once great nation. And we have no small number of exemplars of the genre here this evening. Oh, no. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to find access, easy access, to the chat room, which is beginning to welcome many of our good friends who enlarge the process of the conversation by carrying it on in said chat room. Chat room moderator Sparky is in there. Waggy has joined in. Mr. Gibson's there. Jug of Punch is there. Jan's there. Devin's there. I'm there. Why aren't you? Come on by. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Quite easy to pop on in. You'll also find the brand new stream player, the Listen Live stream player at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Of course, if you are listening via a tablet device, an iDevice, Android, even Microsoft, I guess, we recommend the apps from TuneIn and Stitcher, both quite effective. And a gentle reminder, any ads you may hear via either of those apps are not placed by the horn or in conjunction with the horn in any way, and we receive no compensation for having run them. Okay, just so you know. And, of course, also at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com home website, what have you, you'll also find the PayPal button. That is where this evening, because of the generosity of a number of the members of the Horn family last evening, we were able to make it to $75 fundraising this evening, just $75. So that's where we stand in trying to stay even with the evening. Okie doke. Good. So that gets all of that out of the way. Welcome aboard. And I hope you will find this. Oh my God, I can't believe it. Let's do a little. Since it is Titanic Tuesday, and since not all titanically stupid intellects are necessarily always Republican, or always libertarians, or always teabaggers. No, sometimes, and it's easy when you live in a state with a mono economy. For instance, as I've noted in the past, West Virginia has I can't say absolute zero, but we have very few actual Democrats within the meaning of the word Democrat, as it is largely broadly understood in the United States political lexicon. What we have in West Virginia are colocrats and colicans. In the case of, for instance, West Virginia Governor Gert, that stands for Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, Gert. In the case of Gert, he's a colocrat. And, of course, many members of the West Virginia legislature are colocrats. Sometimes they switch back and forth. For instance, last July, a member of the West Virginia Senate who was elected as a colocrat switched to colican because he was voting with the colicans most of the time instead of the colocrats. So that explains that. I mean, that's kind of a sideshow. But I did want to cover, just touch base on a couple of things. This is one of those exemplary movements, and it's not a story that ordinarily you would think has a tie-in to the ongoing, rolling, monumental disaster, the poisoning of the water supply of 300,000 human beings, which, of course, Angela Logo Massini of the Competitive Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C., and the bubble in which she lives, declares is not really a disaster at all and merely evidence that we hillbillies lack perspective. Anyway, this isn't directly related, but it is tangentially related, and I think you'll see why. The person who covers the State House in West Virginia is a fellow by the name of Phil Kabler, and he does so for the Charleston Gazette. And this is his busy season. Kind of like from January 31st to April 15th is the accountant's busy season. Phil Kabler's busy season occurs while the West Virginia legislature is in session being generally useless and stupid. Did I say useless and stupid? Why, look, an example. Phil Kabler writes from yesterday's paper, last call for bars and clubs in West Virginia would be moved up an hour under a bill passed by the House of Delegates on Monday. golly Moses. We are still in the midst of an ongoing disaster of as yet unknown, unprecedented proportions. But business must be done. And this is just a picture of how an entirely dysfunctional, failed legislature doesn't work. So the West Virginia Hospitality Association goes to the legislature and says, listen, we need to be able to serve mixed drinks earlier in the day on Sunday, because Sunday is, of course, the day of the Lord. No, it's not Wednesday yet. But Sunday is the Lord's day, and Jesus don't appreciate people having a little pop in a restaurant much earlier than noonish, you know, when church lets out, right? And you can't buy beer and wine till like 1 o'clock on Sunday, and So the West Virginia hospitality businesses, hotels, racetracks, casinos, restaurants that would like to put on, say, a nice Sunday brunch, because right now, especially in the nine-county area affected by the disaster, putting on a nice Sunday brunch doesn't seem to be much of an inducement these days because, well, I mean, just an idea of what it is to be a West Virginian, and it happens to be, I happen to be the West Virginian in question. I mentioned in passing last night that my eldest daughter, Agneson, our eldest daughter, was not feeling well and was down in a hospital in Charleston, because that's kind of where you go. I mean, one of the satellite hospitals of the West Virginia University Medical Center is there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, when you go to the hospital in West Virginia or most anywhere else, a trip to the emergency room is a season in hell, because there's a lot of sitting. And regardless of what the issue itself was, when they finally got out of there at 1 a.m., they were starving. Now, bear in mind, inside that hospital, and there are, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hospitals in the general Charleston area, 6, 7, a lot of hospitals. All of those hospitals are, to the best of my knowledge, running water out of their taps. I mean, when the surgeon says, nurse, irrigate the surgical wound, guess what? Unless I hear otherwise. But anyway. So they get done and they're coming home. Going home. Agnes is quite the mama grizzly where the well-being of her babies is concerned. And as God, I hate that phrase, mama grizzly. But they were starving. And so they, I was talking to her as they were headed home. And she said, we're going to stop somewhere and get something to eat. And I said, for the love of God, don't stop until you're out. Oh, wait. So they had to stop at a restaurant within the disaster area with no knowledge whatsoever of what water was being used to make ice that went into drinks or what water was being used to clean things or wipe things down or nothing. And frankly, I don't know where they ate. At that hour of the morning, I'm guessing it was a late run through Hardee's or a McDonald's or some such. But anyway, the hospitality industry, which includes restaurants, has been taking it on the chin as a result of this disaster because nobody trusts the water. Okay? Well, so they asked the legislature, pretty please, to pass a law to allow them to serve alcoholic beverages earlier than when church lets out. Specifically, they were asking to be allowed to serve alcoholic beverages, you know, wine, beer, mixed drinks, at 10:30 in the morning on Sundays. Because brunch, because Bloody Marys, because tequila sunrises, because. So, right-wing Repiglickin from Berkeley County, West Virginia, over in the eastern panhandle, got hold of it. And he said, well, I actually think we're serving the alcohol too late at night. And I want to cut off service at 2 a.m. instead of the present law of 3 a.m. What the hell happened to the Repiglickins who didn't want to... wanted to get government off our backs. Not because see what's happening is that because we have later serving hours than your Pennsylvania and your Maryland and your Virginia, that's bringing the wrong element to West Virginia. Now, one might argue, of course, that the wrong element in West Virginia is more likely to be frackers and mountaintop removal operators and poisonous frack waste conveyors. No, the wrong element is somebody who wants to... Yeah, you get the idea. Delegate John Overington. If I'm not mistaken, this is the same goober who years ago, and maybe he does every year, tries to reintroduce the death penalty to West Virginia. He's been hooting and hollering to have the booze service hour backed up from 3 a.m. to 2 a.m. Because Jesus, for years now. But it looks like, son of a gun, the House of Delegates passed it. It starts out as a bill to let people who want to have a Bloody Mary on Sunday morning with their brunch. Yes, we know what brunch is in West Virginia. We still self-serve fried taters and grits, but we serve it later in the day and call it brunch. But a bill that would allow somebody to have a Bloody Mary with their brunch on Sunday turns into a cudgel for a right-wing morality policeman. Oh, by the way, giving the right-wing morality policeman his way will cost the state $9 million in tax revenues a year. Okay, maybe it's not tax revenue. It's $9 million. It's going to cost $9 million. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's going to cost the state that in $9 million in lost lottery revenues because the reason for keeping, the reason for having the service hour to 3 a.m. is to take advantage of the fact that that means people can continue to run the little no-armed bandit gambling machines, which does draw people in from places where they have to close down and they want to try their luck one more time. Because all forms of the lottery, be it a paper ticket or a video game terminal, All forms of the lottery are an involuntary tax, not on the stupid, but on the unreasonably optimistic. Nevertheless, Delegate Overington, R. Jeebus, said, it means we attract the wrong type of people from Pennsylvania, Maryland, who come to West Virginia because they want a few extra drinks. Yeah, because they come barreling into the bar, into the Dew Drop Inn at 2:01 a.m. Bartender, set them up as long as the bar. I'm drinking till closing. What? Never mind the fact that the bartender is not supposed to serve people who are obviously drunk. So, that cleared the house. On the other hand, and here's the fun one, a little something-something called HB4309. Now, bear in mind, at no point in this conversation am I going to mention anything to you about any legislation that would actually do something to remedy the fact that, or prevent from happening the next time, the poisoning and or killing of any tens, hundreds, thousands, or hundreds of thousands, or fractions of a million human beings in this state. No. But 4309, well, that's an important bill because it has to do with protecting freedom. Protecting freedom. Wolverines! We are not quite as far gone as, say, your Florida is, where guns are concerned. Now, I mean, it's a matter of constitutional law in the state of West Virginia that if, by God, you want to sling your shotgun or your hunting rifle over your shoulder and walk down the middle of Main Street with it, you are constitutionally empowered to do so under the state constitution of the state of West Virginia. Hallelujah. Okay? So, it is still not okay, however, just to take your shooting gun anywhere you want to take it. And generally, having it tucked under the front seat of your car is considered to be concealing it, especially if it's loaded. Now, if it's not loaded, and say the clip or the bullets or whatever are locked in the trunk, kind of like Barney Fife putting the bullet in his pocket under a button, well, that's a different story. But anyway, it is, however, illegal for anyone except duly authorized law enforcement personnel to carry firearms at the capital of the state of West Virginia in Charleston. Reasonable, one might think. I know, for instance, that they have that cockamamie law in the state of Oregon that allows anybody to carry any gun anywhere inside the state capital, and it's a little nervous-making. Well, HB 4309 passed the House on Monday by a vote of 96-0. And that bill will allow people who have concealed weapons permits to bring their loaded firearms in their vehicles onto the Capitol complex grounds and leave them in their cars. You know, there are probably even people among the Horn family who'd say, well, okay, that's you know, it's not stand your ground, it's not blaze at somebody if they make your liver quiver in fear. Yeah, but this is still nonetheless a camel's nose under the tent. But the real beauty here is understanding why this bill passed by a vote of 96-0. That means every colocrat in the House of Delegates and every colican in the House of Delegates, plus the two or three people who might remotely be considered to be progressive human beings voted yes on this bill. Now, in the last session of the legislature, as Phil Kambler reports, there was a discussion had in the House Roads and Transportation Committee, because this is an ongoing problem, and what we're ultimately going to see out of this story is the titanic intellect involved in problem solving in West Virginia, and we're going to connect it. We're going to draw a little line between a couple of little dots. Huh. And in the course of the discussion in the last session, a whole bunch of members of the House of Delegates said, well, hell, I got me a concealed carry permit, and I bring my gun and leave it in my car here at the Capitol.
What, Edith?
Yes. The duly sworn and oath-administered, oath-taken members of the West Virginia legislature, a number of them admitted that they routinely scoff at the notion of obeying the law of the state of West Virginia. So the best way, and let's apply a little bit of analysis to this, just for the F all fun of it, okay? Let's say you're violating the law. Let's say it's jaywalking. The best way to not violate the jaywalking law is not to eliminate the jaywalking law, but rather to stop jaywalking. I would trust that this has some degree of sensibility to it. Not in West Virginia. Not in the Sacrifice Zone. Because the best way to stop breaking the law that says you can't have a gun in your car at the Capitol is to eliminate the law that says you can't have a gun in the car at the Capitol, instead of simply, and really it is much more simple, to obey the damn law. But this has a precedent to it, because some several years ago, and those of you who are longtime listeners to this program will know that I've made mention of this, coal has to be transported away from the place where it is blasted out of the ground or dug out of the ground, and it has to be eventually loaded onto rail cars or barges to get it the hell out of this state and send it out there where it can make some money for a bunch of out-of-state corporate types who don't give a rat's rear end about what happens to or in this state. So a few years ago, people began to worry about the fact that trucks that were gross vehicle weighted for 85,000 pounds of gross vehicle weight were actually carrying sometimes as much as 130,000 pounds when they were loaded up at the tipple and sent off to carry the coal to wherever it was going. In the meantime, these overloaded coal trucks were reducing paved roads the taxpayers paid for to gravel. And because they were overloaded and weren't particularly easy to stop in the first place, they were made even more difficult to stop and thereby raised the likelihood of horrible, horrible car wreck deaths resulting from overweight killer coal trucks plowing over innocent people trying to use the roads of the state that their tax dollars had paid for. So after a great deal of Sturm und Drang and weeks and weeks and weeks of hearings and protests and carrying on, you know what the solution the House of Delegates came up with? Now, if you think about the gun thing that I just described to you, you know what the answer is. The House of Delegates solved the overweight coal truck problem by raising the tonnage rate that coal trucks could carry, so that the coal trucks would no longer be illegal. Because the law was the problem, not the monster killer coal trucks. This is why I refer to West Virginia as a failed state and to the government of West Virginia as mired entirely in deep, deep, deep dysfunction. So, to recap, folks who decide to attend a Sunday brunch at a restaurant in West Virginia, God knows why, well, at least in the nine-county area, God knows why, will be able to get a Bloody Mary at 10:30 in the morning as long as, because the Colocrats have given up in the face of Colican, John Overington, and his puritanical desire to make sure that we stop selling the liquor at 2 a.m. instead of 3. Because West Virginia, you know, what's $9 million to a state like West Virginia in revenues? $9 million, I mean, please. Texas T in the chat room pointing out that that coal truck law is exactly what the Repig Lickens in Texas would do. Why am I not comforted by any of that? So anyway, these were the proceedings on Monday in the House of Delegates. While the seat of government remains at least in part poisoned after a spill, chemical disaster brought on by the deregulation of which that body in August is so fond, brought about. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, the legislature sitting in a city that has been poisoned has time to sit around scratching its ass, picking its nose, and considering whether or not one theocrat from Berkeley County should be able to dictate the lives of God knows who, and at the same time deciding that laws generally are bad things, and when lots of members of the House of Delegates are violating the law, the best thing to do is to just get rid of the law, which is in effect the same mindset that brings about the deregulation that allows God knows how much poison to wind up in the water supply. These dumb bastards have not learned any kind of a lesson except that don't do things if anybody's watching, you know, or looking. Yeah. And then, by way of update, there's GERT. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin. Sock puppet to former governor and currently senator Joe Manchin. GERT is just not real sure whether or not he thinks any state monies ought to be paid out to monitor folks what got poisoned in the deregulation disaster. He's just not sure. Because he hasn't received permission from the coal and chemical and oil and gas industries. You see, John Unger is a member of the Senate of the state of West Virginia. He is the majority leader there. And the state of West Virginia has something that we refer to as a rainy day fund. It's a pile of money that we keep set aside in case the really hits the fan. And I'd say the poisoning of 300,000 people's drinking water supply really does constitute the brown stuff hitting the fan, but GERT's not so sure. John Unger wants to use $10 million out of the state's rainy day fund, which has a whole lot more than $10 million in it, I can tell you, for 10 years' worth of health monitoring of the people who live in the area that coal-fired deregulation helped poison, or did poison. GERT just says, I don't know. I don't know if that's a good idea at all. He said, I'm going to make that decision a little bit further down the road. I told you there was a whole lot more in the rainy day fund than any pissant $10 million. The rainy day fund in West Virginia, a teeny tiny little state, really, is $915 million, and according to the Associated Press, is deemed to be one of the strongest last resort funds in the United States. Now, Gert has already tapped that rainy day fund to the tune of $83.8 million for his state budget. But it'll be two or three more months, and here's the fun part, the legislature will be out of session. It'll be two or three more months before the in-home testing that he finally, reluctantly, grudgingly agreed to begins to generate real-world results. And that's what he says he wants to see, them in-home testing results. Which raises a question. We don't know what's going to happen to anybody who was exposed to the poisons that coal-fired deregulation dumped in the water in West Virginia. We have no idea. Maybe that lady in the bubble in D.C., the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Angela Logomassini, could tell us that it's a matter of perspective again. Twit. We don't know what happened to every person who consumed this stuff. We also don't know what this stuff does to human beings, because really, there's not that much in the way of hard science about it. So medical monitoring would seem to be in order and would seem to be kind of like when you find out there are thousands of gallons of unknown poison in the public drinking water supply, kind of like it would seem to be pretty much just a no-brainer to say, shut the water off, do it now, we'll explain to people it's better that we shut the water off than that they be poisoned, and I'm the governor, and that's why I ran to have the job, because I wanted that risk. No, it was not self-evident, and no, that's not the way GERT operates, and we don't know what's going to happen to the people who drank the water. Although we do know that a number of them have showed up at hospitals, and some of them continue to show up with mysterious illnesses that weren't there before January the 9th. And we know, for instance, according to a radio report that I was listening to a couple of days ago, you know, the story of the caregiver for the individual who had, I believe, muscular dystrophy and had a feeding tube, a direct line into the person's stomach. And the caregiver described how she put, I think, 1,500 cc's of tap water down the feeding tube per instructions, because she's the caregiver. And how almost immediately upon having that 1,500 cc's of poisoned water reach the stomach of this human being, the human being in question began vomiting relentlessly and suffering from absolutely galloping diarrhea. Gee, Earl Ray, do you think that you need to wait for two or three more months to figure out that that individual who, through no fault of his or her own, was poisoned needs to be medically monitored? And at this, and then we have to ask a socio-political question about who needs to bear the cost of that. Why? Should the cost of that medical monitoring be borne by the individual who was poisoned through no fault of his or her own? Or should the poisoner bear that burden? Well, we can start by saying that the poisoner will not share part of that burden because the poisoner is already in bankruptcy. Okay, how about the water company that didn't shut off its intakes? Maybe, but if we wait for that process to go through the court system, the 10 years of medical monitoring may damned well have already passed and blown by before there's any kind of a decision. It is abundantly clear that that individual and other individuals with illnesses, teachers who have passed out from fumes, school cooks who have passed out from fumes and vapors and whatnot, deserve And I mean that in its sincerest, most serious meaning, deserve to be able to periodically be checked out at no cost to themselves to find out if they're all right, so that they, if something does go wrong, they can be treated as quickly as humanly possible. See, a country that prides itself on being a Christian nation wouldn't even be debating this. Unless, of course, by Christian nation you mean nation of abject, unrelenting, remorseless hypocrites, which I think is what that means. Lord God. But we just don't know. We don't know if anybody needs that their medical monitoring. We don't know if that human being who got poisoned just from sitting there having water put into their feeding tube, well, I mean, hell, they might not even be around in 10 years. I mean, what's the fuss, huh? Let's just wait and see. Yeah, it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, isn't it? Sure is. Sure is. Meanwhile, the hearing was had last night about the fact that fracking waste is radioactive fracking waste. Did I mention radioactive is being allowed into county landfills at almost unlimited, in almost unlimited amounts? Yippers. Went looking this morning for a story on the topic. Didn't find it. Still waiting. I don't know. But it is worth noting that the chances of this fracking waste in landfill bills not being passed is... Oh, why do we even talk about it? This whole mess started in July of 2013. That's when Randy Huffman, who complains that, it was July 2013 when Randy Huffman, without any direction from the legislature whatsoever, began writing to county landfills saying, we want y'all to be able to take in all the radioactive solid fracking waste that you want to, because, you know, money. Yeah, let's see. Let's look at one of the people who dumps this stuff. How about the we've talked about these people in the past. How about the Lackawanna Transport Company doing business as the Wetzel County Landfill? It turned out they were violating their monthly tonnage limits. In October of 2013, they allowed 30 more thousand tons of waste to be dumped in their landfill than they are allowed to receive. Guess where it came from? Yes, it's radioactive fracking waste. And that's why there was a hearing, on a bill last night that would exempt landfill tonnage rates from being applied to fracking solid waste. Wow. And then, by the way, this just as an example of the stuff that happens. I mean, this isn't 100,000 gallons of poisonous coal goo coming from a neglected pipe that has a valve go bad overnight because nobody's paying attention to it and the alarm didn't work and, oh, well. This isn't that. This isn't 10,000 gallons of poison in 300,000 people's drinking water. It's not that either. This is just truck wreck. And it's goddamn sad. It was Saturday near the Greenbrier Street exit, which is the exit you take to go down to the West Virginia State Capitol. It was near the Greenbrier Street exit of I-77 where a tractor trailer turned over and killed its driver. It's just a truck. But trucks are fueled by fossil fuels. And somewhere between 30 and 50 gallons of diesel fuel went onto the roadway and then flowed into a storm drain that winds up in the Kanawha River, which just last week had 100,000 gallons of poison coal goo go into it, which just a month before had 10,000 gallons of poisonous coal prep chemical go into it. Yeah. So now there's a diesel-y, oily sheen down on the Kanawha River. But you know, when you're talking about 10,000 gallons of this and 108,000 gallons of that, the hell's 30 or 50 gallons of diesel fuel, right? I mean, that's literally a drop in the really, really big toxic bucket. Tom Aloise of the West Virginia Laughable Department of Environmental Protection said, well, it'll dissipate as it moves down the river. Because that's what our rivers are, see? They're nothing but big sewers. They're just the sewers that Jesus put here for us to foul into whenever we want to. Because, you know, it says right there in the book of Genesis, we are to take dominion over the earth. And sometimes that means dumping 108,000 gallons of poison coal slurry or 10,000 gallons of coal prep chemical or 50 gallons of diesel fuel in it. So there you go. Why not? And at least we can take comfort in the knowledge that some wild-eyed critter from Maryland or Pennsylvania is not going to be getting no butt light at no 2:05 in the morning in a West Virginia roadhouse. Because the legislature of the state of West Virginia they're on the job. No, I'm sure some, I'm not even trying to set up a straw man. I'm sure somebody else, yeah, but Bob, I mean, there's other state business to do. Really? Really? When 300,000 people have had their water supply poisoned, when there are 126 open impoundments with toxic waste in it, that are at most of the dams of which are leaking, There's other business to do? No, see, anyone who would say that, well, folks, the Titanic struck an iceberg, and it's going down. Yeah, but Bob, the deck chairs need rearranging. I mean, we're talking about the legislators of the state of West Virginia duly sworn to uphold the law, and there's a whole bunch of them violating it with their shooting gun freedom protectors. We got to make sure they ain't violating the law no more by making sure the law ain't there. Sometimes it's as important to undo laws as it is to do them.
Mm-hmm.
You get the idea. Meanwhile, in other parts of the country, GK out in Minnesota sent this along. An oil well owned by Whiting Petroleum Corporation started leaking hydraulic fracturing fluid and spewing oil late last Thursday after a well blowout that Whiting Petroleum Corporation said may take a couple more days to clear up.
Mm-hmm.
Why did the blowout happen? Well, the blowout happened because, much as was the case in West Virginia, the gizmo that was supposed to prevent, in the case of West Virginia, the pipe rupture and the spill of 108,000 gallons of toxic waste from spewing, well, the blowout preventer on this particular well, it failed. And it started leaking around 2,100 to 2,940 gallons per day of fracking fluid. Fracking fluid, you will remember, is a mixture of chemicals that the fracking companies won't tell anybody what they are. Because, frankly, if the public found out what the fracking chemicals are, they might throw a fit. Because it's going into the groundwater. Because that's how it winds up that, you know, you can light your faucet water on fire. Oh, by the way, in addition to the 2,100 to 2,940 gallons of fracking fluid per day that were coming out of the blasted well, another 8,400 gallons per day of oil were coming out, according to Reuters. Whiting Petroleum Corporation said, well, none of the water, none of the liquids, because they can't call it water, none of the liquids got into the water, but there was some oily mist that sprayed onto the frozen creek. It was mist. See, it's just a very little bit. You know, you can drown in a mist. But don't worry, Whiting Petroleum Corporation will, of course, be allowed to continue fracking and drilling to its toxic heart's content. How much longer? Well, roughly in these places where there are booms taking place, it'll be 10 to 15 years, and then you'll see these cancer clusters popping up, and people, oh, I wonder why that was. I mean, were they consorting with the devil, and this is just a plague that God done sent them for consorting with the devil? Well, you know, metaphorically, you could probably say that if we're willing to understand that the frackers and the mountaintop removers and the poisoners and the chemical suppliers and the people who hide the chemicals from the people, that they are the devil. Yeah, I guess that would be a penalty for consorting with the devil. Mercy. So, yeah. Titanic Tuesday. Fracking. Coming to a neighborhood, state, county near you. And who knows? Tar sands extraction. I mean, my God, when it comes to Northwest Alabama, like I was talking about last night, it's going to go pretty much anywhere. Who knows? Apparently, this stuff's all over the place. And people have figured out a way to make money at it. As long, as mentioned, as long as they externalize the costs onto the innocent people who have to drink, eat, bathe in, breathe, ingest the poisons themselves, and never get to send, oh, you know, a bill. Right. Right, right. But like I said, we've got a, we got an absolute boatload of these toxic, titanic geniuses. And we'll talk about a lot more of them in short order. We've also got the Green News Report coming up with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to that. Your calls are welcome at 304-658-3333. And on the Skype line at Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Bob Kincaid Horn, H-O-R-N. Either way is fine by me. Email works too. Got a great email in the hopper as well. And that's bobkincaid@gmail.com. You can reach me by Twitter, @BobKincaid. And you can reach me on Facebook. Any guesses? Yes, Bob Kincaid. So let's take a little break, go to the Green News Report. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Looking to raise $75 this evening. Just $75. Because that's how this all stays on the air. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
I want to tell you a story about the house went blue. I come home one Friday, had to tell the landlady I done lost my job. She said, that don't confront me, long as I get my money next Friday. Now next Friday I come, I didn't get the rent, and out the door I went. So I goes to the landlady, I said, you let me slide, I have the rent for it tomorrow, the next day I don't know. So she let me slide it on, you know, people. I notice when I come home in the evening, she ain't got nothing nice to say to me. But for 5 years, she was so nice. Lord, she would love a dove. I come home one particular evening, the landlady said, you got the rent money yet? I said, no, can't find no job, therefore I ain't got no money to pay the rent. She said, I don't believe you're trying to find no job. Said, I seen you today, you were standing on a corner, leaning up against a post. I said, but I'm tired. I've been walking all day. She said, that don't confront me. Long as I get my money next Friday. Now next Friday I come out and have a rent. And out the door I went. So I go down the streets, down to my good friend's house. I said, look, man, I'm outdoors, you know. Can I stay with you maybe a couple days? He said, let me go and ask my wife. To come out of the house, I could see in his face. I know there was no. He said, I don't know, man. She kind of funny, you know. I said, I know. Everybody funny. Now you funny too. So I go back home. I tell the landlady, I got a job. I'm gonna pay the rent. She said, yeah. I said, oh yeah. And then she was so nice. Lord, she was lovey-dovey. So I go in my room, pack up my things, and I go. I slip on out the back door. Down the streets I go. She hollering about the front rent. She'll be lucky to get in the back rent. She ain't gonna get none of it. So I stop in a local bar, you know, people. I go to the bar. I rent my coat. I call the bartender. I said, look, man, come down here. He got down there. So what you want? A one bourbon, a one scotch, a one beer. Well, I ain't seen my baby since I don't know when. I've been drinking bourbon, whiskey, scotch and gin. Gonna get high, man, I'm gonna get loose. Need me a triple shot of that juice. Gonna get drunk, don't you have no fear. I want one bourbon, one scotch, one beer. Now, at the bar, I'm getting drunk, I'm feeling mellow. I'm drinking bourbon, I'm drinking scotch, I'm drinking beer. Look down the bar, here comes the bartender. Look mad, come down here. So what you want? One bourbon, one scotch, one beer. No, I ain't seen my baby since the night before last. Gotta get a drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here? time. I put it high. You know when your mouth is getting dry, you put it high. Look down the bar. I see to my bartender. I said, look, mad. Come down here. She got down there. So what you want this time? I said, look, mad. What time is it? He said, the clock on the wall said 3 o'clock. A last call for alcohol. So what you need? One bourbon, one scotch. Since a night on a week, gotta get drunk, man, so I can't even speak. Gonna get high, man, listen to me. One drink ain't enough, Jack, you better make it three. Gonna get drunk, I'm gonna make it real clear. I want one bourbon, one scotch, one beer. One bourbon, one scotch, one beer.
It's Tuesday, February 18, 2014.
Today, we're taking the next step.
Obama's plan to keep on trucking with much less oil.
Climate change can now be considered another weapon of mass destruction, perhaps even the world's most fearsome weapon of mass destruction.
John Kerry goes weapons grade on climate change, plus...
I'm one of those who are called... deniers.
It's the Green News Report's fifth anniversary. So to celebrate, all of the Sunday news shows finally covered climate change.
Badly. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We do not have time for a meeting anywhere of the Flat Earth Society.
Oh, thanks, John Kerry. There go my weekend plans. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it's official. The Green News Report is now 5 years old.
Woohoo!
And, of course, to celebrate, as you mentioned, all of the Sunday news shows finally decided to cover climate change this weekend.
Yeah, it only took extreme storms battering the East Coast, the UK drowning, Australia baking, California drying up. They finally decided to cover climate change after ignoring it for years.
Right, but they did it really poorly, and only two of the shows even bothered to bring on a climate scientist.
Yes, ABC's This Week and Face the Nation on CBS at least had actual climate scientists, and predictably Fox News Sunday focused solely on denying the science.
That's a given, so we can ignore them. But I think it was David Gregory, and I wrote about it at bradblog.com and Salon this week. I think it was David Gregory and Meet the Press who took the cake for the absolute most embarrassing performance for what he billed as, quote, a debate about climate change as if there is really anything to debate. He had on Congressman Marsha Blackburn, a huge denier, and he had Bill Nye, the science guy, who, while I'm sure he's a very nice fellow, he's not a climate scientist either. So in case you didn't see it, here's pretty much all you need to know from the entire Meet the Press climate change segment.
Now I want to turn to the politics of weather. What a big story this week.
Oh, yes, it is. The politics of weather. What a very big story this week.
There is not agreement around the fact of exactly what is causing this.
Yes, there is. It's man. Man is causing it. At least according to 97% of 4,000 scientific studies over the past 20 years, which discuss the cause of climate change. 97% of them said man was the cause.
There is not consensus.
Yes, there is. There is consensus. 97% consensus.
There is not consensus there.
Yes, yes, there is. No matter how many times you say it, there is consensus there.
You don't need a PhD in climate science to understand what's going on.
But apparently, you need one to make sense of Meet the Press.
We are going to leave it there. This debate goes on. I thank you for your time this morning.
Absolutely.
Both of you.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. That's all you missed on Meet the Press, Desi Doyen.
Yeah, it was another embarrassing failure for them.
And for David Gregory, can someone please put him out of our misery?
Meanwhile, in the reality-based world, President Obama on Tuesday launched the next step in his year of action on climate change by tightening fuel efficiency and emissions standards for heavy-duty trucks.
Heavy-duty trucks account for just 4% of all the vehicles on the highway.
But they're responsible for about 20% of carbon pollution in the transportation sector.
This is the second phase of further tightening the historic, first-ever fuel efficiency standards for heavy-duty trucks that Obama instituted 2 years ago. President Obama also addressed climate change during a tour of drought-stricken California last week, asking Congress to create a new climate change resiliency fund to harden infrastructure and help communities and farmers recover from and prepare for these extreme weather events like droughts, wildfires, and floods that are projected to increase due to climate change. And at a speech in Indonesia over the weekend, Secretary of State John Kerry was blunt in calling on all nations to unite to fight climate change, calling it a weapon of mass destruction.
When 97% of all scientists agree on anything, we need to listen. We certainly should not allow more time to be wasted by those who want to sit around debating whose responsibility it is to deal with this threat while we come closer and closer to the point of no return.
It's a remarkable shift in rhetoric for an administration that would barely even talk about it for years. But it's also questionable calling on all countries to act because the U.S. is still considering coal exports and, of course, the Keystone XL pipeline.
And is there any way that John Kerry can make a speech like that and still approve the Keystone XL pipeline?
It really doesn't seem likely, but hey, you know.
Where there's a will, there's a way. For much more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. It is, as we said, our fifth anniversary of the Green News Report. Over at Brad Blog, where we're celebrating our 10th anniversary, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report stay on the air for another 5 years. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Is that so hard, David Gregory?
Eight minutes past the hour. This is the Horn Titanic Tuesday for this, the 18th day of February 2014, hour number two. And just as a follow-up to all the things that go bang and kaboom and the poisons that, yeah, one more, because it's Titanic Tuesday. Somewhere inside the PR apparatus of Chevron, there is a Titanic intellect a-blossoming. Oh, yes. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette from February 12th says, more than 12 hours after an explosion that sounded like a jet engine going 5 feet above your house, as one neighbor put it, the fire, fueled by the well's gas, continued to shoot flames and smoke into the air, causing a hissing sound that could be heard a quarter of a mile away. Well, that hissing sound was the sound of profit. The heat of the blaze, which caused a tanker truck on the site that was full of propane gas also to explode, was so intense that first responders from local fire departments had to pull back rather than risk injury. John Poister is a spokesman for the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection. Oh, God, when are we going to change the names of these organizations? The Pennsylvania Department of Industrial Extraction Protection? Because truly, whether it's Pennsylvania or West Virginia, we're talking about organizations that are basically a protection racket. They essentially retreated to let the fire burn, he said. In the fire, one person was injured, and another is presumed dead. God. Chevron owned the well in Bobtown, Pennsylvania. And, of course, we had the explosion of the pipeline in Knifley, Kentucky, and the various and sundry derailments, and these things are beginning to pile up a little bit now, aren't they? But the difference between the Bobtown explosion and the Knifley, Kentucky explosion and the dumping of 108,000 gallons of poisonous coal goo into the Kanawha River, or the poisoning of the water supply of 300,000 human beings, or or, is that, by God, Chevron are pros. They know how to respond. No, really. It was 5 days after the fire went out, which would put it a couple of days ago. Chevron sent another spokescreep, a person by the name of Kent Robertson, to talk to the local ABC affiliate. He said he really didn't know why the fire went out. I think he was glad. But he said, there's not enough fuel being admitted to sustain combustion, and with the cooling of the crane, the ignition source has been removed. Yes, the crane, the steel of the crane was rendered so effing hot that it provided an ignition source for the gas and the oil as it blew out of the blown out. Yeah. So somewhere within the bowels of the Chevron Corporation, they've got a department called... oh, God, this is too good. They've got a department called the Appalachia Community Outreach Department. You want to know how the Chevron Appalachia Community Outreach Department reacted to this massive explosion that injured one and left another presumed dead? Well, if you happen to live within the general vicinity of the Bobtown explosion, the Appalachia Outreach, the Appalachia Community Outreach Chevron Department sent out gift certificates. Everybody who lived near this massive explosion of deregulation and unlimited profit grifting got a coupon for a free large pizza and a 2-liter bottle of pop. Oh, really? Really? Hi, this is the Chevron Appalachia Outreach Department, and we wanted to let you know that we feel real bad about it. No, actually, they sent a letter. Dear neighbor, we're sorry to have missed you. You know what? When you just had an explosion that disappeared one and killed another, I wouldn't start the letter with "we're sorry to have missed you." Reload! Dear neighbor, we're sorry to have missed you. We wanted to provide you with a status update on the February 11th incident that occurred on Chevron Appalachia's Lanco 7H well pads in Dunkard Township and see if you had any questions or concerns that we could address. Sure. Why are y'all here? Oh, because Jesus and money. Oh, okay. Do I still get the pizza? Sure. Chevron recognizes the effect this has had on the community. Do they, really? We value being a responsible member of this community. Then it would be best not to have your well pads blow the hell up. Well, accidents happen. And we'll continue to strive to achieve incident-free operations. Notice they're going to keep trying, but they don't guarantee that they will succeed. We are committed to taking action to safeguard our neighbors, our employees, our contractors, and the environment. Notice the environment comes last, whereas if you really want to safeguard the well-being of people, putting it a little further up the list might be much more effective. If you have any questions, please call our toll-free community line at 1-877-847-8408. Thank you, Chevron Community Outreach Team. And that letter accompanied the free pizza gift certificate. Of course. Because when you've been poisoned, it all gets ever so much better. If you've got a pizza and some pop. 15 past the hour, a couple of lines open, 304-658-3333, jump right in. Conversation Radio, this Titanic Tuesday on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Both are available for your use as you see fit. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Edward.
Just 1 minute.
Okay.
I just needed to turn my speakerphone off. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, anyway, no, the other night our friend in Cleveland was talking about chicory and coffee.
Yes.
And we used to drink coffee in eastern North Carolina. I don't know whether it's still available or not, but it was called Louisiane.
Oh, yes. Was, oh, yes.
And it had chicory in it. And chicory is just it's the root of the endive plant that's dried and roasted.
I'll be darned. I didn't know it was endive.
Yeah, it's the root. You eat the leaves and roast the root, and it turns into chicory.
I'll be doggone. I had no idea. Endive, son of a gun.
Yep. How about that? Oh, dear, dear. Oh, and by the way, I really enjoyed Peter Gabriel last night, The Rhythm of the Heat. Woo-wee.
Has that man ever made a bad song?
I don't know, but I tell you, every time I hear anything like that, I want to rip my clothes off and go out in the backyard and build a big bonfire and dance.
And just dance around it.
Dance around it, but it would not only scare the hell out of my neighbors, it would frighten the horses.
And, you know, they don't take kindly to that horse frightening down in Texas.
You don't want to, here in Texas, you do not want to frighten a horse. Well, that comes from Mrs. Patrick Campbell, I believe it is. She was a famous Victorian actress and played and starred in many of Oscar Wilde's plays. And someone asked her one day, does certain behavior bother you? And she says, oh, no, as long as it doesn't frighten the horses.
You know, we've got a statute here in West Virginia that makes it a crime to, and I'm not kidding, Edward, worry the sheep.
Worry the sheep.
Yes.
Well, I can understand that.
It's kind of sad that it's kind of sad that we need a law. I can't imagine. I don't want to imagine, although things are beginning to filter through my tiny little mind now, Edward, as to what in Appalachia might be considered sheep worrying.
Let's don't go there.
I'm trying really hard. I mean, I don't think you worry sheep by saying, hey, the market fell 2% today.
No. I don't think so either.
It reminds me of that joke that that culminates in the kid at the door telling the traveling salesman, no, that's just Dad.
Oh, dear. You didn't have to tell that.
Well, I know.
It made me hysterical at the moment.
Yeah, I know, but you're the one that gave us the poem with the, yes, and I still tell that.
Yeah. Well, yes, mm-hmm. Oh, I was thinking about her today. I was actually thinking about her son, her oldest child, Fred. He had the four-door Cadillac sedan, the one that had the biggest fins in the world. And our little town, all these streets came in, and this one went way over across the river, and you could see like a mile and a half down this road. And Cousin Fred drove until he was 92. And every now and then he had visited his sister down on Boat Sound or something, and somebody would be walking across the street, and they'd see Fred coming way off, and they'd start hollering, watch out, here comes Fred! And you had to watch out. And one time I went with him, I should have never done this, drove down to his sister's on Vogue Sound, and in that huge Cadillac, and it started raining. And every window in that car went down.
By
the time we got to his sister's, we were drained and drenched and everything else.
Saturated even.
Absolutely. We pulled in the front of her house under the, well, I guess you call them a porte cochere or something like that.
Absolutely.
And anyway, turned the damn thing off. All the windows went up. I got out of the car, and I kicked that car. And I said, Fred, you were afraid that Geraldine was going to hex me. I think she hexed your damn car. So, anyway, I hope your friend can find some chicory coffee, because I like it.
Oh, I love it, too. And in fact, Louisiana makes a really respectable I have to have decaf.
Yeah.
Louisiana makes a real respectable decaf chicory coffee, and if you make it strong enough, it's very much like coffee itself.
Well, I'll be darned. I didn't know that. I'll have to try it.
It's very good.
Well, we also had a use for the coffee cans. We saved them. Lots of people there in Eastern North Carolina chewed tobacco. And we used it for the purpose to spit in.
Well, you got to have some sort of a spittoon.
Well, we spittoon or cuspidor or something like that, but most people use a Louisiana coffee can.
made such a pleasing plink when the yes. Ding.
Yes, absolutely. Well, take care. And I just wanted to call and give you the recipe for chicory.
I'm curious enough that maybe come spring I'll plant some endive and find out the hard way.
Well, that would be a good way to do it.
Is it just, is it Belgian endive, any endive?
To me, endive is endive. I don't know.
Okay.
I know it's the leaves are sort of bitter. I like them.
Oh, I love, yes.
I love to make a sauce out of cream cheese and stuff and stuff the leaves, you know, if you use them as hors d'oeuvres or something.
Oh,
like
well,
that.
I've always just had it in salad. That sounds magnificent.
Yeah. Cream cheese and cream cheese thing, or you could even just get some Hidden Valley or whatever they call it dressing and use that on it.
That'd be yummy too.
Yep, I like good food. Of course, you wouldn't know that if you saw me. I've lost weight though. I've lost about 40 pounds.
I need that's about exactly what I need to shed.
Well, I tell you, it ain't easy. And
it's easier if you're actually trying.
Yeah, it sure is. But
my weight loss program right now, Edward, is at that point of the guy who kept praying to God to win the lottery, and one day God said, "Meet me halfway and buy a ticket." I need to shed about 40 pounds, but I also need to work at it. And
well,
that's part. No, in all seriousness. It got up to 55 degrees here.
Oh, today there?
Yes, yes. And
gosh, here in Dallas it was 72.
And it was heavenly. And it gave me that first little hint that maybe winter's finally on the way out the door. Now, as soon as I say that, some sort of polar vortex will come down and put us in the deep freeze till June. But
it's not going yet.
The hardest thing about winter for me is just not being able to get out and do stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Because it's not like there's an indoor walking track around here, and you can only do so many laps around the Piggly Wiggly before they start looking at you funny.
Oh, me. Well, in my neighborhood, everybody over here walks and jogs and does all that sort of stuff. I used to, but I think, you guys go ahead. I'll let you do it. I'm an old fart, and I'm just going to sit back and watch you sweat.
And get some vicarious exercise.
I don't know what's happening, but you're fading away.
I don't know why.
I don't know either. It's I get you over the internet, so who knows?
Well, indeed. But thank you, Edward, for calling in, and thank you for adding to the storehouse of wisdom.
Well, you're welcome. I help as much as I can.
And it is
sometimes
always a joy.
My help is not wanted.
You have a lovely evening, and don't frighten the horses.
I will. Well, yes, in memory of Mrs. Patrick Campbell, I will not frighten the horses.
Good idea. Take care, Edward.
Bye.
Bye now.
Thank you.
Edward calling from Dallas. Don't frighten the horses. And, I, you know, I, I wonder how many of us are going to plant endive this year. Just now, what we have to find out after this is what is the ratio of roasted endive root to coffee in order to give a proper flavor. So I'm sure one of, you know, that's the fun part of this program. Somebody will find that out and then share it with the rest of the group. Let's continue. Hey, welcome to the program.
You think so, huh?
I feel pretty good about it, Bill.
Well, sit down in the chair here while I put this bright light on you. I've got a question for you.
All right. Oh!
Have you ever been a member of the Republican Party?
Insofar as my religion, I don't espouse any particular religion, but I do know that if the Christians are right and St. Peter's sitting up at the pearly gates with a big book of all my sins, when he opens it up and we begin that accounting, the one thing I will never have to admit to having been or done is being a Republican or voting for one.
Good. There you go. Well, you and I are in the same situation. I remember being at a county fair in Geauga County, which is still quite a country setting. A lot of Amish out there. And
is that where that Geauga Lake...
Well, Geauga Lake was out in that area, yeah.
Yeah, because that was an amusement park or some such?
Yeah, it was an amusement park, which I've been, was a visitor to, but I didn't. The one that we had on the outskirts of the city of Cleveland, that's the city of Euclid, which was very urban, is Euclid Beach Park. That was the place. Because you could jump on a local bus, and there was a free gate, and he had a ride that was a half cypress barrel. And the ride ran on casters. It was called a flying turns. And you literally went down a hill and picked up some speed. And the next thing you know, Bob, it was a dry bobsled ride is what it was.
Ooh.
Oh, it was good. And on top of that, usually when you were out there was a female date, if you were male, or any kind of date of whatever you were with that you liked that much.
Yeah.
Somebody got in and sat down, and the other person sat down, and these were flat seats. So the person was pressed right up against you.
Yeah.
And, of course, as you went around those turns, you really got the pressure. It was a popular ride with young adults, to say the least.
I can imagine why.
I don't know why either, Bob. It's just, but you guys talking about coffee and chicory, I forgot about Louisiana. You can get it sold under the name French Market. And what I was buying was Café Du Monde, which...
Yeah, Café Du Monde is, of course, that very, very famous...
New Orleans
locale for beignets and...
Yeah.
And they've got very good coffee, too. Louisiana's a Louisiana coffee. And they
I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, they make nice tea, too, but it doesn't have chicory in it.
Well, I didn't know what chicory was, but you guys just educated me tonight to what... Because you used to be able to buy the stuff... And when in a bag, and you could take a measuring device and use two parts coffee and one part of that stuff and stir it all up and make it yourself. The way I was taught Americans, you did everything yourself, you know?
Right.
You plumbed, you fixed your car, you climbed on your roof and broke your ass and all the things of home ownership and such we did by yourself. But yeah, you got me wound up tonight with the way these guys are manipulating things so badly and getting away with it. You begin to ask yourself a question: is our country reached the level of stupidity that these people can be told anything?
Reached? I think we've been camped out there for a while.
Yeah, I guess so. Because we thought in '64 when Goldwater took such a thumping, we thought we were done with the whole thing.
And that's right. That's one of the essential problems. Same thing happened with Watergate. Once again, people thought they were done. But these are the Republicans, the right wing, the GOP, the birthers, deathers, tenthers, booger eaters, John Birchers, libertarians, whatever. They're vampires.
Yeah.
And unless you just absolutely grease the steak in garlic oil and drive it all the way home. And heave the body out of the box with the soil from the native home country, you're not done. They have to be run completely to ground.
They will be back. You're absolutely correct. They keep, and I don't know, the problem is, Bob, I have a real bad attitude towards the old time religion. You know the.
Well, I wouldn't expect you to have a very good one, Bill, because for God's sakes, it's part and parcel of why we have the problems that we do.
Yeah. They're still hiding behind that stuff and blaming it on the good Lord himself. He's the one responsible for all this stuff. Because didn't he write it somewhere that you're supposed to do this, that, or the other thing?
And take dominion over the earth. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's... you were talking about Missouri and fracking?
No, we were talking about Pennsylvania and fracking.
Oh, Pennsylvania, yeah. Because they start working too hard. They start shoving stuff into the ground around New Madrid. They might wish they hadn't.
I was looking at a story in the Stack earlier today about, no, it wasn't in the Stack. As a matter of fact, it was on my Facebook page. I can call it up here real quick. The headline of the story, and Sparky posted this on my page. Why are Oklahoma earthquakes so loud and frequent? Loud, and this is from KOCO.com, loud booming earthquakes continue to rattle homes and nerves.
Hmm.
And
they drilled a lot in Oklahoma over the years, haven't they?
And they're fracking now for all they're worth. In point of fact, our buddy Isaac sent me a map today showing all the pipelines that converge in Cushing, Oklahoma, I think it is. And that's why. But by the same token, at least this gets a news story, because massive blasts that would shake your teeth take place every day in Appalachia, and nobody's out there writing articles. And it's beautiful. If you send a complaint, we had one a couple of weeks ago that sounded like the beginning of a war. And a couple of people wrote letters to the laughable West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection Blasting Office, and the response came that, well, they weren't over-blasting. Over-blasting is what happens when you use just too much of that same stuff that Timothy McVeigh used on the Murrah Federal Building. They weren't over-blasting. It's because there was low cloud cover and the air burst reverberated back and forth between the clouds and the earth. You know, as if the clouds were made of what? Stone?
Yeah.
You know, it was like it was like shooting a bullet in a metal box. You know, just lots of ricochets. That's what made it seem like such a big blast. Because the presumption is that the godforsaken coal company would never, ever do anything like that.
No, I mean, aren't they making enough money just as it is?
There is no such...
Green steps?
Watch your mouth.
Okay.
I mean, really, Bill, enough when we're talking about hydrocarbon companies? That enough is the dirtiest word in their language.
True.
And by the way, by too many earthquakes, this is a fascinating story, actually, from KOCO. The agency tracking seismic activity in Oklahoma reported more than 20 earthquakes on Saturday in Oklahoma. There was one 3.5 magnitude quake Saturday in the Edmond, Oklahoma area. And many of the quakes in the latest swarm are centered near Liberty Lake in Logan County. One woman's tile floor, ceiling, and walls were all damaged. She has new cracks in her newly built home that were caused by the constant quakes. And her home in York, Oklahoma, got 8 temblors on Friday. She didn't just feel them, she heard them. She said, felt like bombs going off. It's just a huge, loud noise, and then it's like a reverb from... And, of course, the fracking companies are, wasn't us! Except it was.
Yeah. Because that's one thing. I mean, when I was a kid, there were big oil field fires in Oklahoma. There was a guy who made a big name fighting those fires, big reputation. I can't think of the guy's name anymore. But, he had a built-in fortune to be made putting those damn things out. So what else is new, you know? Same old, buddy. Yeah, I just, you know, you can't keep up with it, Bob. And I've got to hand it to you. You've got a an excellently strong stomach when you can read some of the stuff you read.
It has nothing to do with the stomach, Bill. It has to do with just feeling this sort of lonesomeness that somehow or another somebody has to be talking about this consistently, that it can't be something that comes 30 minutes after the Chris Christie story.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That this can't be the ha-ha kicker. And hey, friends, look, a big old well pad in Bobtown, Pennsylvania blew straight to hell the other day. Ha, 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 ha. Now the weather. No. Somebody's got to lead with this stuff, Bill.
The news, local news is a piece of crap. They didn't bring my old television, so I suppose I either have to buy a new one, which I don't think I feel like doing, because why? TV used to serve me in one place to listen to a football game that I couldn't get over the radio, or to find the old movie channel and sit down and watch an old Bogart movie for the 18th time, you know? It's a funny thing. But you hit it on the head. I was never an ecology kind of a person because I was trying to survive, and I always had one ear on the social aspect of our society and the international stuff. If you were 18 or 19 years old during the Cuban Missile Crisis, you got a hard dose, you know?
Yeah, but part and parcel of why it's so hard to get people active over stuff like this is that the other side has been so very, very successful at talking about all of these existential crises in terms of economics. For instance, just because West Virginia and Central Appalachia are what I know, we talk about jobs instead of talking about human lives.
Yeah. Well, we sure as hell need them. We've been sending not enough of them to a lower budget in Asia. And that's not a mock on or a knock on the people that are doing the work. It's the fact that this is where these companies are sending the work. And if I'm not mistaken, that was highly illegal at some point. I think Alexander Hamilton would have shot himself if he was around seeing this stuff today. Because as bad as the guy was, he tried, in his mind, he wanted to set up an economy that was basically to spread money amongst the people who lived in the nation. The jobs were to be here, you know.
Yeah.
And if I was raising kids today, I don't know what I'd tell them to do for a living. Because, well, nobody ever told me. I just kept gravitating from one thing to another. And, you know, music finally was enough of a living. Because it didn't take that much to... And my wife was, my second wife, well, both of my wives made good money. One of them is still working at the first one, and they both had master's degrees and, you know, did pretty well for themselves. And me, I just kept pushing along with music, and everything fell in the right place. I was working the right job in a proper location that people who liked this music would come in and listen to you. And, of course, they liked it because everybody was staggering. And the guns of the sexual revolution were going off and all over the place. Those, you know, those were popular times to be out drinking in bars. Because God only knows. Well, that's tomorrow night, I'm sorry. if there is one, they're the only ones that would know what would happen. And the things I would see and going on around me, you know, maybe that's why I lost so much hair. I kept standing there scratching my head saying, what the hell is this? What the hell are these people doing? Yeah, but you guys hit it tonight, as always, and then that was interesting, Edward. Yeah, chicory coffee. I still have one unopened can, and I got a buddy on the west side who will stop at the...
Well, when I want it and when I can remember to do it and everything, I just order it in off the interweb tubes.
Yeah, that's what I used to do, but right now I don't have either email. Well, I'm waiting for a guest expert from south of here. So, you know, he'll get me straightened out eventually. But because a lot of my calls are coming in saying, Bill, what do you do? I send you email and it comes bouncing back at me. Something wrong? yeah, something's wrong, and the damn thing isn't set up correctly, because I lost the, what did I have that came with the computers, the program?
Oh.
The email program that came
with. Oh, Outlook?
Outlook, yeah. And they, Outlook Express has crashed on both of the computers. And my other one's sitting, my buddy picked it up, the guy that built it, and he's got a spare hard drive, and I ordered a copy of the magnification program is on its way, so eventually I may go back up to having two of the old, you know the ones you like so much? You know the operating system that...
Oh, Windows 8?
No.
Oh, XP.
XP.
Yeah.
That seems to be a pretty damn good operating system. Or was.
Well, it was wildly stable, but it couldn't keep up with the demands of capitalism, so it had to be killed and
yeah,
seven's not it. I'm getting slowly but surely it may be that 8 would work fine if I upgraded all the hardware in this computer, and maybe I mean I'm sitting here I've got a wish list. We're 10 years old now. It's time for new equipment here. It's time to replace the mixer. It's time to replace the computers. It's time to replace the everything. But I don't know. If it ever comes to the point where we can afford the Apple tax, maybe we'll just take this whole thing over and you know, go Mac on all of this. Because it's... Well, I can't... The production computer here, half the problem I have with it right now is the fact that it just doesn't have enough memory and it doesn't have enough computing speed, I guess.
Don't say the word memory to me, Bob. If I had one little problem with that mishap, because I was on the way to hitting a good stroke, and then one of our members decided that Bill didn't sound like himself on the radio.
Yeah, a lot of people decided Bill didn't sound like himself that night on the radio.
Well, I must have been. Both of my wives would have said, well, he's always been a babbling idiot, so, you know.
No, I think even they would have been concerned.
Yeah, they might have been. They were probably concerned that maybe I owed them some money and they'd never see it. But, yeah, thanks.
Mrs. Katz and her lawyer.
The powers that be that people recognized the fact that I was... Well, I was packing to move out of this place. In fact, I got a nasty letter from them. They
there's no doubt that the stress played a huge, huge role in that, Bill.
Yeah. Well, I had to move out of there in one hell of a hurry, and I kind of like the place I'm at. One of my old friends, a guy who was the first idiot that ever got me up off a chair to back him up when he was playing acoustic guitar, to play harp with him, which led to the disaster that I called a career. I shouldn't say disaster. It was a damn good career when you consider... By the way, who did the hooker thing on the beginning of the show, the beginning that you were playing?
That was George Thorogood.
Oh, okay. Well, I should have figured, because George can do it. George is a great slide player, too. Or was. I don't even know if he's around anymore.
No, he's around.
Yeah, because he was,
Yeah, that was one bourbon, one scotch, and one beer.
Yeah, that was the old hooker thing. Well, that whole boogie, that whole John Lee Hooker boogie thing is, it's so much him that I never did anything using that figure because it was just too much him. And, that's just the way it was. Well, anyway, I'll let you go, but, as usual, you guys are on the beam, And Edward hit it right on the nose. I forgot about Louisiana. They used to make a good chili seasoning mix, which was I cheated like hell. I'm making a pot.
Oh, I love some of those box meals out of that neck of the woods. Louisiana does some good stuff, and so does Zatarain's.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I haven't seen them around in years.
Oh, they're still out there. I see it from time to time, and. Another thing I love, you're not particularly terrified of spicy. One of my favorite seasonings out there is Tony Sachery's. You ever tried that?
No.
Yeah, it's just a seasoning mix, and it's got a little bit of heat to it, but it just makes stuff pop with flavor.
Well, that's what we are. I enjoy anything in the way of hot food. It hasn't got to me yet. It will eventually, I suppose. The only thing I notice about me is I got to watch the napping. I've been starting to, you know, after the health aid leaves, it's like time to take a 15, 20-minute nap, you know?
There is nothing wrong with anybody on this planet that a siesta will not help.
Well, I did a job on myself shaving the other night. I gashed myself good. And I'm thinking, yeah, I used to watch your granddad stand there with a straight razor and wondered how a man in his 70s could still do that without cutting his own throat, you know? But, yeah. Anyway, I'll let you go, and hopefully there'll be a few good callers as always tonight, and you take care of yourself.
All right, Bill, be good, and we will talk soon.
Yeah, well, I never tried that being good stuff, George. Yeah.
Yeah, what am I saying? Be good, please.
Yeah,
don't be good, be awesome.
Yeah, well, you want to bore yourself to death, be good. I'll talk to you.
All right, see you, Bill. Mr. Stress, Bill, our buddy, calling from Cleveland. It is 13 minutes before the hour, 13 minutes before 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, and gotten a little more information in regard to chicory and in regard to its relationship to endive. Timothy just wrote in, noting from Wikipedia, common chicory, Chicorium intibus, is cultivated for salad leaves, chicons, which are the blanched buds, or for roots, varietal sativum, which are baked, ground, and used as a coffee substitute and additive. Chicory is also the common name in the United States for curly endive, Chicorium endivia, and these two closely related species are often confused, as Timothy notes. Also, supposedly anise and fennel are different, too. He says, but tell that to my local farmer's market. Yeah. And cumin, according to Jim, is the oldest spice used by human beings. Yeah, we have these little conversations from time to time, just because, you know, I want my family to, you know, we're all kind of, we enjoy food, and I just want them to know where stuff comes from. And so we were talking about chili peppers, and the word is chilies. Pepper is not part of the thing, versus pepper, which is peppercorns. And peppercorns coming from South Asia, and the chile being a North American thing. The only reason that the Otne Ute Aitbre Spaniards, who invaded Mesoamerica and thereby came across the chili, the only reason they considered it a pepper is in line with the same reason that they considered the people who lived here to be Indians. Because the whole idea was to the whole idea with the navigation and Prince Henry the Navigator and all of that, the Portuguese, the Spanish, Columbus, the Italian, the whole idea was to do an end run on the hold that the Muslim caliphates had on the spice trade. And so they thought that if they could sail around, and so the idea, and the things that people are taught in schools, the whole flat earth notion, nobody thought the earth was flat in 1492. But Columbus was dramatically dumber than most because he thought the world was tinier than it is. Not flat, tiny. And so when he gets out of the boat on a little atoll called, or a little tiny little sandbar island called Little San Salvador, we don't really know anymore what the locals knew it as because, well, the European invaders made them all get dead, in large part along with their language. But he thought he was in India, and he said, show me the pepper. And you can imagine the hand signs and the loose translations. And he said, you know, kind of in your mouth and making, oh, chili. And so that's how that happens, that pepper gets attached to chili when they're not even remotely right related. And that whole discourse came from a conversation Ferg and I were having where he said, you know, I prefer white pepper to black pepper. It has a better flavor. And I had to explain to him that white pepper was just black pepper with the outer hull removed. So, but it's at least fun to know this stuff. Irish Dave pointing out, around these parts, being good is just another way, be good is just another way of saying don't get caught. Yeah. And then, of course, there's the ever-popular, if you can't be good at it. Lines open, 304-658-3333. Bob Kincaid Horn is the way you reach the program via Skype. And thanks very much going out to Glenn, who just helped out in a big way with tonight's fundraising. Thanks to Glenn and thanks to Sal. We are only $20 away from reaching our goal this evening. Glenn says, I used to live in Preston County, West Virginia, and I miss all my friends down there. It's the relationships between people, between communities, and with the land itself that makes people pine for this place, even when they've moved to places that seem far more civilized. You still pine. But, Glenn, I would suggest that if you've gotten away from anywhere that's being fracked, you're in a far better place. But thank you very kindly for helping out this evening. It is very important that you have done so. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Hey, Jim. What's happening?
Just listening to your dialogue there. I think Christopher Colon, or Christopher Columbus, as he's known, would have been much better served had he paid a little more attention to Prince Henry the Navigator and his school that he established at Sagres in Portugal, that's for sure.
Right, but the whole reason that he went, that Colon went to the Spanish was because he knew that they had a hankering to try to outdo the Portuguese, right?
Well, let me put it this way. It was sort of divided. It was a line of demarcation with the Borgia of Pope Alexander VI. So he kind of divided the world between Spain and Portugal.
Yeah, and heretics need not apply.
Well, I guess so. I
mean, and the people who were living on the land didn't really count either.
Well,
I mean, do you realize that up into the 19th century in the United States Supreme Court held that dispossessing native people from their land was okay because they weren't Christian?
Yes, I'm aware of that. I am.
We got a lot to work off in this country, Jim.
Well, I don't know if it's going to be in purgatory or wherever, but I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a cotton field sort of like the ones that surround Angola, right?
And yeah, the Angola in Louisiana.
Yes, exactly. You were going with spices and stuff like that, but cumin is one of the older spices, and I can guarantee you one thing. If you take cumin, chili powder, and cumin, and there's one other ingredient that I use, basil, and if you just put that together, I can guarantee you will not have a chili that will disappoint.
Oh, no. And there's something, and I don't know what the difference is, but I've seen it sold in various locales, and I buy it when I see it. There's apparently a difference between oregano, as you and I understand oregano, and this is not an old pot joke or anything, Mexican oregano.
Right.
And it has a distinct flavor that's inescapable, and I just love that.
Well, you can put a dash of oregano in there, and, you know, I made this chili. I've been making it all my life using cumin and basil and chili powder, and I remember at Andrews Air Force Base, we had the Air Force chili cook-off thing, and I'll be damned if I didn't win it.
Did you really?
Sure did. And bat chili has been with me a long, long time, and it definitely is good for a cold night. And, you know, it's you can fill it with all kinds of good stuff. I mean, basically, I take the shortcut. I just get the red peppers that are frozen and all the other stuff, brown the beef, and drain it. That's not any beef, but like, you know, ground sirloin or ground chuck or something. And because you don't want to have a lot of grease floating in that stuff because it's just nasty.
Well, you can always let it cool a little bit and then skim some of the fat.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I always put mushrooms in mine.
Oh, I love mushrooms in a good chili.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now my take on it, I tried to replicate, and I was pretty successful with it. I tried to replicate what I imagined a native chili mole would have been, and of course mole is an alt word that just means mixture. But instead of using a ground beef, I tried to use something that would have a little bit more of a stringy character to it. Trying to imagine, and if you want to get real authentic, you can just make it straight up with deer. And it's delicious that way, too. But I like to use a real slow-roasted brisket and then fork shred it instead of chopping it.
Well, you certainly start from the very beginning, so I'll just have to settle for the good quality grade of ground.
Yeah, I mean, I do that maybe once a year just to keep my hand in.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know how big your kitchen is, but nonetheless, you can really get into some heavy business if you really want to go all the way out.
With that brisket, typically I'll trim a whole, you know, because there's fat layer and then there's meat and then there's another layer of fat, and I'll trim as much of the fat as I can, rub it with a mixture very similar to what you're describing, and then roast it really low and slow, and once it's done, fork shred it, and then I make a chili paste. By, you know, the dried chilies you can buy in the store, they come in big bags because they're kind of bulky. Cut the tops off of those because the stems don't do anything for it. Shake out the seeds, and then split them and let them sit in boiling water till they rehydrate, and then run them through a Foley food mill.
Good Lord, Bob, I'll tell you. That's...
Oh, it's labor intensive, but damn, it's good.
Sure it is, but I'll tell you something else that's always great to put in chili is paprika.
Oh, absolutely.
But of course,
the only thing I will not put in chili is what people from Cincinnati put in chili, and that is cinnamon.
Well, that's a little strange to me.
Have you never had what passes for chili in Cincinnati?
Thank God, no.
There are two competing restaurant brands. One is Gold Star, and the other one's Skyline. And I guess it's been explained to me as being a sort of Greek interpretation, but it's a ground meat tomatoey chili, but it is sweet and redolent of cinnamon, and they serve it over spaghetti noodles and top it with shredded cheese and, like, raw onions.
Well, you know, let me retract that statement. Maybe that's a good recipe. I'm sure it is for those people, but I've never thought of it.
Oh, Cincinnati people rave about it, but I just can't get into sweet cinnamony chili. I'm just weird that way.
No,
and now I'll get hate mail.
No, you won't. No, you won't. I mean, you know, taste is relative, and it varies from different parts of the country to different parts of the country. I mean, for example, with barbecue, you've got tomato based and
vinegar based
and mustard based and this, that, and the other. It depends on what you're used to, what you're growing up with, and just what you like. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I've mentioned from time to time, and I guess you and I have entered into the food porn segment of the program.
We've done that many times.
Yes, we have. I get such a hankering for the hot dogs from this one little place down in Northwest Alabama, and nowhere on earth serves anything remotely like them. I mean, from New York to California, don't matter. This one place. That I have from time to time thought about just jumping in the car and going down there and buying them and coming back. But I have not yet done that because that's just extravagant and ridiculous.
Well, you know, there's a place up here called Tudor's Biscuit World.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And they have very good hot dogs.
Well, the hot dogs up here, there's a little Exxon up on the hill with a little kitchen in it. They do a respectable hamburger, and I've been told by a number of people that their hot dogs are excellent. They actually cook the hot dogs in their hot dog chili, which doesn't seem like a bad idea at all when you stop and think about it.
I've done that too, as long as you've got Nathan's hot dogs or good hot dogs, because you don't want to have, when you start thinking about hot dogs and stuff like that, all kinds of things come to mind.
Yeah, you don't want them falling apart.
No, nonetheless. But nonetheless, they have good, very good hot dogs in that particular establishment. But anyway, food is relative to taste, as taste is relative to everything else.
And I'm sure you've had the classic Chicago dog. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah.
I love those with the little sport peppers on them. Wow.
Well, we can go on and on and on. It's just wonderful. We can all get real hungry here. I hope you've got a nice dinner awaiting you when you leave.
I'm going to have the fancy ramen noodles for dinner, Jim.
Okay. Well, that sounds like...
the ones with the flavor booster packet.
Oh, dear. Well, that sounds like quite a reward. What can I say? So, what else has been going on in the world to, besides what you said, to... engender your interest?
Oh, everything. Everything interests me. You've got... this might interest you, because, you taught school for a while.
That's it.
And this is one of those moments where you don't get to necessarily excoriate the Republican for doing this. This comes out of Kansas, and it's a Democratic lawmaker there, a state representative named Gail Finney, who has introduced a bill in the House of Representatives in Kansas, Jim, that says that that teachers, caregivers, and parents should be able to strike children for purposes of correction, and it's okay if they leave bruises.
No, it's not okay.
No, I think it's barbaric. But
it's not okay. As a matter of fact, it's reprehensible, and it should be actionable for punishment.
Well, right now the law in Kansas says that you cannot spank a child and leave marks, welts, bruises, things like that. But State Representative Gail Finney, according to KCTV in Kansas City, wants to allow children to be beaten until bruises are left.
Oh, what the hell are you supposed to use, a rubber hose?
Now, that's actually addressed in the bill. Children can't be hit in the head or in the body, and you can't use your fist or a belt or a switch. There's nothing in here about rubber hoses. Or perhaps ironing cords or Hot Wheel tracks or... there's nothing in here. I don't know if it's okay under this bill to burn them with cigarettes or not.
Oh, well, during my days, when I was subject to that type of punishment, my task was to go out and cut a switch.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, I've cut my own, too, and that's the longest walk.
Oh, not really, but I mean, what I would do, I would always take a knife and cut that thing so it would break.
Why, you devious soul, you.
Oh, wouldn't you?
It never dawned on me.
Hell yeah, and cut it in two or three places. And then by that time, my dad didn't even like to do it. By that time, he had gotten over it because he was not a violent man or anything like that. But he said, well, I guess you've had enough. And I said, I sure have. But I used to, shall we say, weaken the joints in that particular hickory or whatever it was,
Right.
And...
Peach limbs.
I remember the last time, I think my mother tried to give me a switch and whistle when I was 12, and actually, we were in the dining room, and she was just real angry about something. I guess I'd done something. I'm sure I had. God only knows. And I said, I just took it away from her. I said, you're not going to hit me anymore with that. And she started laughing. She said, you're too old for this. She's not even why I decided to do it. I was just angry. I said, well, it's okay. Didn't hurt me. Hurt me more than hurt you. That's what they would always say. Now, son, this is going to hurt me a lot more than it's going to hurt.
And has any child ever believed that?
Mm-hmm. Like Santa Claus lives on Mars. I mean, you know, good Lord. I mean, rearing children, that's an art. It really is, as well as a science. And you don't need to have to induce corporal punishment on people. There he is. Rupert saying hello.
Yeah, I hear him.
But nonetheless, I mean, you know, that's something that I have never really, endorsed as corporal punishment. And they don't do that now too much. At least I hope they don't in certain places. I know they have.
Well, corporal punishment is banned in 30 states.
Well, you know, basically, with kids and stuff like that, when they do something, they will just put them in the corner and say, time out, stuff like that. That's become, I think, a little more humane than inflicting pain. Because, I mean, there's going to be enough pain inflicted in your life that you develop through the ages without having to have that as something to keep.
Well, you know, what's particularly twisted out of this idea
trying to sleep at night, you know?
Is that the deputy county attorney of McPherson County, Kansas, went to this representative to suggest that she introduce the bill. And they and here's the, you know, here's the upside down, backwards and twisted logic they're using. They say that by defining the right of parents and teachers and caregivers to leave bruises on children, that protects the child.
Well, let me tell you something. When I was a kid and there was a thing about corporal punishment, my dad left word with the school administration, if anybody's going to do that, it ain't going to be you. It will be yours truly. And if you don't believe it, just try it, and you'll be sorry. He said, no one will ever do that to my child except me, and I don't do it very often. And at above the age of 10 or whatever, it stops, and we reason.
Right, because you...
Oh, I remember. Listen, I had this principal. Oh, God, his name was Langford. He had red hair. I hated that bastard. And so realizing he could not beat me, he made me walk up three flights of stairs 42 times. And I came home from school late that day. And so I was kind of frazzled by it, to tell you the truth.
I can imagine.
And I told him what had happened. And he said, okay, okay. And I could hear that door close in his study, and I could hear that phone dialing. And then he opened the door where I could hear. And he said, if you ever in any way inflict any type of punishment on my son, you will be stocked and you will stay stocked, you goddamn son of a bitch.
And that ended it.
I mean, this was even better than William F. Buckley and Gorby Doll going at it. I mean, really, it was better. It was much better. And so, I was very thankful to have the father I did. He was a good man. God knows he is, but I know he's looking down upon us. That's just my personal belief. But, Lord in heaven, I mean, when you have children, it is such a responsibility. And you know, the care and the fostering and bringing them up and trying to make them a better place and a productive citizen in the world, it is a responsibility that is no less than awesome. It is totally awesome.
And you know, in the dark and still of the night, Jim, it is terrifying, too.
Oh, I'm sure it
is. Nobody ever explained to me, I mean... You get it. You got an idea. You know, I mean, my parents did say, you know, someday you may have kids, and you're going to learn what it is to really worry. And you know, you worry through the childhood illnesses and the chicken pox.
Oh, yeah.
You worry through that, and then you send them off to school, and the first time they come home from school crying, because someone, some other parent's ill-mannered little heathen has been mean to yours?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You feel some combination of rage and just unending grief.
Oh no.
And then they start getting older. And here's the joker in the deck, Jim. You don't start worrying less, you worry more about different stuff.
Yeah, it always increases the burden of responsibility, and God only knows what will happen. But listen, I will tell you a story and get off here. This is kind of funny. I've told you this before. I think I was in the fifth grade, and these guys had said, hey, put a mirror on your shoe and stick it under this girl's dress. And I said, for what? I said, you know, are we doing heliographs here? He said, no, you can see her.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. Well, I did that, and this girl was a lot bigger than me, and she had this plaid lunchbox, and I can see it right now. She took that lunchbox.
You can see it headed for your head, can't you?
And she absolutely pounded me right into the ground to the point where I could have been a goalpost.
Didn't do it twice.
No. Kids do strange things. And, well, what can I say? I mean, that's just a story that we talked about before, but it sure taught me a lesson, that's for sure. So we have to learn lessons on our own sometimes, right?
Well, indeed. We don't learn from all the things we do right.
Unfortunately, we don't learn from all the things we do wrong, and that goes all the way up to adulthood.
True, true.
Sure.
Witness this woman in Kansas.
Oh, that's just too much. Well, anyway, glad the weather's warming up.
No, I hope it stays that way.
And while I see, I certainly do, because this is just tiring. And absolutely.
I've complaining about the weather's like, but still, this has seemed this. And for people who live further north who deal with a lot more bad weather in the winter,
oh God,
I'm sure they're busily playing My Heart Bleeds for You on the world's smallest violin right now. But this has seemed like a relentless winter.
Well, you know, the English talk about the weather, the French talk about wine, and I certainly don't want to have to talk about this kind of weather too much because it's really getting kind of deadly. I mean, we're really having some real problems here, and it's, you know, definitely denigrating and destroying what left is the infrastructure and infrastructure in this country.
It is,
and it's taking a serious toll on bridges. It's taking a toll on highways and stuff like that. And you know, we went through that thing long time years ago about the grade D infrastructure that's been given the American Society of Civil Engineers about infrastructure of America. And like I say, if we need to spend money, we don't need to spend it on, for example, I'm sure you've heard about the F-35.
The Joint Strike Fighter,
the latest one, and yet it's seven years delayed, and I don't know how many billion dollars over budget, and the avionics in it.
And the military branches aren't exactly swooning for the want of it.
Well, they've ordered over 100. I know that, but I mean, you know, it's just not. I mean, I just think about, and then of course you have the Chinese have their version of it, the Russian Federation have its version of the same kind of plane and stuff like that, and you know, it's just kind of, you just get to the point where, how much money do these people need to spend on a fighter whose avionics don't even work? And they're causing all kinds of problems. And the latest problem that they were having, of all things, was with the tires of the damn thing. I mean, even Hitler had solved that problem with his big Mercedes, and so has the president with having tires that have inner, you know, compartments that, you know, they don't blow out.
No. I've actually been in an airliner. We were coming from Charlotte to D.C., and it was a United flight. And when we landed, I heard a kabang, and then heard that telltale pocket a pocket a pocket a pocket a noise, and looked out my window and saw hunks of airliner tire just sort of scattering.
Good Lord, the things they tell you to do for your own automobile, that be the first thing in a pre-flighting, what they call a pre-flight of any aircraft. I remember when I used to fly, that was one of the first things that was checked.
Well, and realistically, who is the enemy that thing was designed to subdue? Because we've already got pretty, unless we go to war with who's got better aircraft?
Well, you know, it's a matter of each of the services and stuff like that are very parochial, and each one wants to outdo the other and get the very best fighting equipment there at any expense. And of course, if you would look under the sofas in the Pentagon, you'll find enough money probably to fund the boot stamp program of this country and several others, you know? That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a very strong lobby, and, you know, DOD is...
And poor folks who would like to continue eating food have no lobby at all.
Unfortunately, that's the case, but, I mean, there it is. There you have it. So, on that note, with cumin and tires and stuff like that, I will get off here and let somebody else talk to you.
All right, Jim, have yourself a good evening.
Okay. Take care.
All right, take care. Bye now. Jim calling from not too awfully far from here. And, well, it's the one thing that just about every West Virginian can agree on right now, unless perhaps you're the operator of a ski resort, in which case, well, I think a couple of ski resorts announced extended April ski dates in West Virginia today. But everybody else, now they pretty much, and February's tough anyway, because although it's the shortest month, it seems to be the most brutal one. But you can almost imagine, but Appalachian Springs, for all that Andrew Copeland, is that who I'm thinking of? For as beautiful as that piece is, Appalachian Springs can be kind of brutally unpredictable. But the one sure sign of spring is when the first ramp pokes its little broad-leafed green self through the soil. And yeah, I'm looking. You know what? I really am. I'm looking forward to that first mess of ramps and beans and potatoes. Mm-mm-mm. Let's keep it rolling. 304-658-3333 is the number. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Alan.
Hey, what's happening, Alan?
Oh, not much. I heard you talking about some kind of coffee.
Oh, chicory, yeah.
Yeah. Last summer, I dug up some dandelion root and dried it and made a coffee out of that. And it was really, I really like that.
Really? I mean, what bit? I mean, does it have a bitter quality to it?
I didn't think so. I don't remember. I just remember I liked it. It was a dark color.
Huh. And well, I know a tea made from dandelion is said to have a sort of tonic quality to it.
Yeah, I remember reading it's really healthy for you. I can't remember.
And I love little tiny young dandelion leaves in a salad.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I just got the roots and chopped them up and dried them in the oven. That's all you have to do. Today I got on the internet and I wanted to look up places to the safest or best places to live during global climate change. And from reading that site, it sounded like the polar caps are gonna move. Have you read something like that?
They're gonna the polar ice caps are gonna move.
Yeah, like the poles of the Earth are gonna like shift, and that could cause earthquakes and the shifting of the Earth, the plates of the Earth. Maybe I Maybe I got on a quackery website.
You kind of, no, I mean, the poles do migrate. I mean, true north is different from magnetic north. But I don't know if they were saying that that was a cause of global climate change or something. No, I'd say that maybe there was a little bit of at least a little bit of quackery involved.
Yeah. Okay.
And if anybody wants to school me, they are welcome to write in and let me know.
Yeah, I was wondering if you have so much ice on the poles starts moving. And that could cause the Earth to start shifting, and then maybe that kind of stuff can happen.
I've read something at some of the non-standard science sites talking about the precession of the equinoxes and but anything that points away from the fact that the climate has changed dramatically in the in alongside the development of the steam engine and the industrial revolution, I tend to discount, because that seems like we're trying to hide from anthropogenic global climate change. Devin just shot me a note in the chat room saying that the polar stuff is BS, and Devin keeps a pretty good eye on the sky.
Okay. I better stay away from the quackery stuff. I was in a dog park about a few weeks ago, really, down in Dallas, Texas, and this guy was trying to tell me that we're going into global cooling.
Oh, that's a big one with them, too.
Yeah, started back in the 80s.
That's like the lady on Fox Radio TV Rwanda the other day who said, nobody calls it global warming anymore because nothing's warming, even though the last 15, 20 summers have been the hottest summers on Earth on record since, like, umpty thousands of years ago.
Yeah. Well, this man in the dog park, he gave me some name, some science organization. I can't remember the name of it, but I found it on the internet, and I couldn't find hardly anything about global warming except some kind of interview with Condoleezza Rice. So that kind of,
oh dear,
maybe didn't know where that was coming from. Well, I guess that's about it I was wanting to talk to you about.
Well, where are you these days?
I'm in Indiana. My girlfriend lives in Lafayette, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Spent a lot of time here, and a lot of snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in some ways, it's better than being back in Alabama, at least during the hard freezes. I'll take snow over ice any day, Alan.
Yeah. Hey, I read on your site about this snake handler that got bit.
Yeah.
Oh.
Got called home to Jesus by a rattlesnake.
Yeah.
The Lord moves in mysterious and occasionally serpentine ways.
So instead of saying that he was a sinner, that's why he got bit. The Lord wants him to come to Jesus.
Well, that or, he'd been bitten like 8 times before and claimed that faith healing always worked for him. But this time, I guess his faith just fell a little bit short. And see, that's what happens when you live in an arbitrary universe where the whim of some great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky causes the laws of nature to just bend and twist in the wind. Sometimes he likes you, and well, sometimes he doesn't.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny how they have an excuse for everything. I saw an article about, I think, some kind of Christian college is trying to hide some sexual abuse.
Oh, yeah, Bob Jones University.
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting article.
Well, it should come as no surprise, Alan, that the weird, repressed, twisted, sick fundamentalist freaks at a place like Bob Jones University who get real bent out of shape about the dark-skinned people of dating with the light-skinned people would have something like that, because allegations of sexual abuse tend to follow realities of sexual repression like linked up cars in a wagon, or linked up wagons in a wagon train.
Yeah, like you said, no surprise. Doesn't surprise me at all.
No, not at all, and I don't want to ruin prayer meeting Wednesday or anything, but you know we got another one of those banging around out there somewhere. An Assemblies of God youth minister in California just got taken down for kiddie porn.
Oh, it happens all the time.
Yeah, and remember, he's a youth minister, 27 years old, Oakdale, California. The Modesto B says he was taken to Stanislaus County Jail, and the police got search warrants, and they raided his home and his office at the church and seized up a bunch of computers.
I bet Fox News is not talking about that.
Oh, no. another creepy part of the story. If you go to the church's website, it'll say, Tyler has had the privilege of seeing hundreds of teenagers come to Christ throughout his ministry here at Bethel.
Oh, so they're trying to cover it up, too?
No, they were. That was just his PR before they found out he was a kiddie porn guy.
Man, the news. Okay, well, I guess I better go back to my dinner. It's interesting talking to you.
Always a pleasure, Alan. You drive safely, and look forward to hearing from you again.
Okay, thanks.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Alan the trucker pulled over in Talibandiana. Yeah, 27 years old, youth minister, Tyler, and you could not get away with giving him a name like this if you were writing a novel or detective fiction. Tyler Bliss. They don't know yet if he was involved in the production of the stuff that they found on his computers, but spokespeople for Ceres Police say that the seized items featured exploitative images and videos of children under the age of 13. According to the Modesto Bee, Bliss has served in youth ministry at the church since 2009 and oversees junior high, high school, and college programs while pursuing a preaching license with the Assemblies of God. Suffer the children to come unto me, right? But we understand why it is that things like this happen in America. Yes, we do. Things like this happen in America because of the demonic influences of secular society. Just ask that man with a voice made for print, Mark Levin.
But aren't they entitled to equal protection of the law, gay people?
How about polygamists? Are they entitled to equal protection of the law?
Well, but I'm not looking to marry two or three. What?
Actually, and this goober is allegedly a lawyer. You may recall Dr. Bill talking about him at length because this is the guy who wants to rewrite the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Yeah. No, he's allegedly a lawyer. And you know what? Polygamists are entitled to the equal protection of the law. We don't have a law that says polygamists can't own homes. Mark Levin, of course, is a big supporter of fundamentalist Christianity, and we don't have a law that says 27-year-old youth pastors who are caught with kiddie porn are guilty just because they're caught. They are entitled to the equal protection of the law and to the due process of law in determining their guilt or innocence. And even though they're charged with sex crimes and child pornography, in the name of Christ, we still say that they are absolutely entitled to a jury trial, a trial by a jury of their peers, and that they cannot be subjected to either bills of attainder or laws passed ex post facto or to a tainting of their estates or a tainting of their progeny with the fruits of their crimes. So, yes, Mark Levin, you damn dummy. They are entitled to the equal protection of the law. But never mind, because, well, Mark Levin's a damn dummy. But do continue, Mark Levin, you and your voice made for print.
Yeah, but they are, but there's a family in Utah that was, and they went to federal court. Just answer the question, pal, because you're just saying there are no limits or there are limits. Where do you draw the line? Go ahead.
That's not equal protection.
This is the old man on dog argument that he's refreshing, trying to get a few more miles out of the whole Santorum sickness.
Because you're not talking about one spouse.
Oh, I see. So before, in the Lovey decision that was raised, we were talking about traditional marriage and race. Now,
Loving versus Virginia, the Supreme Court decision that struck down laws against interracial marriage. This brilliant Solon is now going to distinguish that decision.
Now we've changed it. Now we're talking about one spouse, not traditional marriage and race, and shouldn't that be protected under the 14th Amendment? And I'm asking you, why is that the limit?
Well, I mean,
why can't a man marry his goldfish? That's where this goes.
Well, I just answered it. I don't think that they're the same thing. I think that you're...
Well, traditional marriage and same-sex marriage aren't the same thing. Barring people based on race from marrying who are different sexes, is it the same thing as same-sex marriage?
Well, maybe.
So none of these things are the same. And I'm asking you a question. Why do you draw the line there?
Well, as a somewhat libertarian, it is hard to draw the line because, you know, as long as somebody's behavior doesn't directly affect me, why should I dictate what they do? Well, how is that?
Is that what a civil society is? So if the guy on the corner.
Here it comes. Get the duct tape out. Get the tennis ball. Remember, this guy wants to rewrite the Constitution. He said so. He's hustled a book. He's sold a bunch of those books that he's hustled.
All right, I'm gonna move on here. I don't know what to say.
How about nothing? How about going off the air? Go play with your guns or something. Never mind.
Well, I do know what to say.
You knew he did.
I do know what to say. As long as somebody's behavior isn't bothering me, that's a good general rule. But what if somebody's behavior isn't bothering me, but it has an overall effect on society if everybody behaves in a certain way?
I smell a false equivalence coming, don't you?
Let me put it to you a different way. If everybody in society smokes pot, is that a problem? Does that affect you? If everybody in society takes heroin, is that a problem? I'm using extreme examples. Just
really? Pot's an extreme example? Pot and heroin, same. This man is an absolute master of the false equivalency. In fact, it's pretty obvious that he's a... Oh, no, I'm not going to use that tired old joke. But... So we've gone from talking about marriage to talking about what? Pot smoking and heroin use. And as Irish Dave notes, if you go to marrying a goldfish, what sleep number does the fish get on the mattress that you sell on your radio program? Good question. Here we go, though. Pot smoking, heroin. Where are we going? Where are we going, Mark Levin? Screech and tell us.
To address an extreme point. I generally agree with the point, but it is not a pure point that I can accept.
Huh?
We have all kinds of criminal laws. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, that affect behavior that may not directly affect you, but does affect society as a whole. I'll give you an example.
Do. Please.
To be as clear as I can.
He's going to give us an example, and thank God this is radio, so we don't have to see that neither hand is above the desk when he's talking.
I'll give you an example.
You said that.
What if an individual decides to have sex with a close relative? And what if it's both agreed to? They both agreed to it.
You got this? Marriage equality is the same as incest. Or heroin use. Or pot smoking. Yeah. This is the poster child for the titanic intellect of the right wing.
Let's say a father with a daughter. I know it's grotesque. I'm just making a point. I'm not saying a minor either. With an adult daughter.
Oh, for a minute there, I thought it was going to be an Appalachia joke because he was talking about a minor.
Does that affect you? Does that affect society? Is that something where we should turn the other way and say, hey, look, they're two adults, let them do what they want? I say that affects society in a big way. So I can't just buy off on that sort of fortune cookie statement that, well, as long as it doesn't affect me, well, that's the test, isn't it? May not affect me directly, but what if it affects society in some perverse ways?
See, the problem is the language. What if it affects society in some perverse ways? Oh, language must be interpreted. It is not self-evident. Thank you, Dr. John. I may just have that inscribed on the wall here. Because if you want to talk about perversity, well, I think an argument could be made that we've talked about perversity all night long. How perverse is it for Chevron to incinerate a human being for over money? Now, if you had a loan shark who sent his enforcer out to somebody who was behind on payments, and the guy doused the deadbeat in gasoline and lit it and burned him up because of the money owed, we as a society would put that person in prison for a very, very long time. Some states, we would give them the horizontal crucifixion. On the other hand, if Chevron incinerates a human being and lacks the motivation of doing it retributively because someone owes them money, and instead does it because someone is a fitting repository for the externalized cost of the conduct, well, hell, that's an accident, and everybody gets a pizza. Marriage equality does not affect Mark Levin, and Mark Levin, by his own very words, has proven that he is not a fit arbiter of what it is that meets the standard of the good of society as a whole. Because, among other things, Mark Levin thinks it's good for society as a whole to let the Chevrons and the various pipeline companies kill people left and right for nothing more than the electronic transmission of phony baloney imaginary money. And it would not, and he would probably like it even better if it was being done for straight up gold currency. herein we have the absolute compromise in values that is represented by the right-wing, repig-licking, libertarian, birther, deather, bircher, tenther, booger-eater mentality. Which brings me to an email going back to yesterday and an argument presented or some suggestions presented by our buddy Harry in Baltimore regarding the right-wing strategy of creating doubt, which was referenced by Bill Nye the Science Guy in his debate with Marsha, goodness, Blackburn, Sunday on Meet the Prestitutes. Harry writes, although I did not know about David Gregory's hosting of a debate between Bill Nye and Marsha Blackburn, and you may recall that I don't think much of David Gregory, I was interested in your comments about Bill Nye's debate strategy. You noted that Bill Nye referred to Ms. Blackburn as a leader, and that was indeed perhaps an overvaluation of Ms. Blackburn. I myself think that Bill Nye was trying to shame her about her stance in the debate. Of course, I would ask editorially, how do you shame a person who is without shame? Harry continues, for example, he also said the Congresswoman is trying to introduce doubt in the whole idea of climate change. This argument by Nye about the introduction of doubt is, you may recall, something that analysts of the corporate war on science have often pointed out. For example, you may remember that I sent you a report of a tobacco executive who, in the late 1960s, told his fellow executives that doubt was our product if the tobacco companies wanted to stave off strict regulation, if not the banning of cigarettes. I also mentioned to you a book about this phenomenon by an epidemiologist and current Assistant Secretary of Labor for Occupational Safety and Health called Doubt is Their Product, How Industry's Assault on Science Threatens Your Health by David Michaels. Came out in 2008. So, Harry says, although perhaps Bill Nye was being too nice to Ms. Blackburn, he may also have been trying to shame her about her use of the infamous corporate strategy of doubt. I think Bill Nye's point may have been that Ms. Blackburn should be a leader for acknowledging reality rather than a corporate shill using the corporate strategy of doubt to discredit the accepted truth of climate change, all of which I agree with in principle with Harry, but the problem is it's difficult to get that across to a viewing public who is entranced by the likes of Honey Boo Boo Child without telling them straight up that that's what you're doing. Harry says, I also would agree with your observation last night that the producers of Meet the Press should have and could have found a more incisive communicator of climate science than Bill Nye. In fact, I noticed that Bill Nye could have been even more effective, for example, in his statement during Sunday's debate that a change from 3.2 parts per million to 4 parts per million was, in fact, a large change. He called it about 30%. Ironically, there is a now well-documented inherent bias in human thinking relating to percentages versus absolute numbers. This bias has been documented in a significant number of experiments by experts in cognitive bias, including psychologist Daniel Kahneman, winner of the Nobel Memorial Prize in Economics for his work on cognitive biases. He discusses this bias in his recent book for the public about cognitive biases, Thinking Fast and Slow, out in 2011. The bias is variously referred to as the base rate neglect bias, the extension neglect bias, or more generally as the representativeness heuristic. The general idea is that human beings are inherently better, particularly in situations involving multiple probabilities, in adding absolute numbers rather than working with probabilities that have to be multiplied or otherwise manipulated in formulas such as Bayes' theorem. For example, in analysis of medical risks of treatment involving medical tests that have known false positive rates, experimental subjects have an easier time determining the true risk of having a disease when they are instructed or guided to break the percentages down into absolute numbers. When subjects are just given probabilities of false positives and overall probability of having a disease, many more subjects get the answer wrong. So even though Bill Nye tried to make the change from 3.2 to 4.0 sound more compelling by describing it as a change of 30%, it is not clear that this was a better communication strategy according to what the research on cognitive bias tells us. Moreover, Representative Blackburn, or the talking point memo she was given, was trying to downplay the degree of change by focusing on the parts per million part of the statistic, and Bill Nye seemed to miss that rhetorical device. So Nye might have been more effective if he had said, for example, just off the cuff, parts per million, Marcia, is just the measurement scale. The fact is that we have had a change from 3.2 to 4.0, and if you think about it, that's the same degree of change as the difference between 32 and 40. Let's think about that. If someone told you the average depth of a river not far from your house had risen permanently from 32 to 40 feet, I think you and most other people would be seriously concerned about how that permanent change in the river would affect your house and your personal safety. So it may be that Bill Nye was not quite savvy enough and not cynical enough. I think the emphasis is on not cynical enough. To understand all the deceptive psychological and rhetorical strategies that Blackburn was using and had probably been given by her handlers. He spotted Blackburn's use of the corporate strategy of introducing doubt, but missed some other devious strategies. And Harry suggests, perhaps you could host a short discussion sometime, and this sounds like Friday on the front porch material, about other people out there who are better communicators of science than Bill Nye. For example, Joseph Rahm of Think Progress. Because it seems to me this is yet another arena where Democratic progressives frequently lose to the right wing. Communication skills. And communicating about science is, I would think, even harder than merely communicating about the content of a policy or a new piece of legislation. And then with regard to an overarching query about Moran Monday, Harry asked the questions, would it be fruitful to start distinguishing between intellectual lightweights or even nutcases on the right wing from those who are saying stupid things primarily or solely because they are engaged in deceit for financial and ideological purposes, i.e., bullshitting on behalf of their patrons and audiences? And I think this is a magnificent idea. And let's try to keep this in mind. And point out when we're just talking about the Lulus versus the people who are not so much being morons themselves, maybe, but instead are making morons of the people who buy into their hoodoo. Very good idea. And then a little more from Harry. He notes that there is research out there, and this goes particularly to the Mark Levin argument. Harry shares information regarding something called scope neglect. I love this kind of stuff because it sends my mind reeling for hours on end. There is apparently a book out there called Global and Catastrophic Risks, edited by Bostrom and Cirkovic. It's apparently not. Harry says he hasn't seen the published book, and this is the first he's heard of it. It's a collection of essays on global, environmental, as well as other risks. And he cites to the author of a chapter, the author being Eliezer Yudowsky, who writes about cognitive bias in decision-making. and shares a couple of quotes. These are pretty important. In a paper entitled Insensitivity to the Value of Human Life, a study in psychophysical numbing, the authors found evidence that our perception of human deaths and valuation of human lives, obeys something called Weber's Law, meaning we use a logarithmic scale. Indeed, studies of scope neglect, in which the quantitative variations are huge enough to elicit any sensitivity at all, show smaller linear increases in willingness to pay, corresponding to exponential increases in scope. The authors interpret this as an additive effect of scope effect and prototype affect. The prototype image elicits most of the emotion, and the scope elicits a smaller amount of emotion, which is added, not multiplied, to the first amount. Referring to the scientist Albert Szent-Györgyi, who said, "I am deeply moved if I see one man suffering and would risk my life for him. Then I talk impersonally about the possible pulverization of our big cities with 100 million dead. I am unable to multiply one man's suffering by 100 million. Human emotions take place within an analog brain. The human brain cannot release enough neurotransmitters to feel emotion 1,000 times as strong as the grief of one funeral." There's another one for the wall. "The human brain cannot release enough neurotransmitters to feel emotion 1,000 times as strong as the grief of one funeral. A prospective risk going from 10 million deaths to 100 million deaths does not multiply by 10 the strength of our determination to stop it. It adds one more zero on paper for our eyes to glaze over, an effect so small that one must usually jump several orders of magnitude to detect the difference experimentally." And it seems to me that the vast majority of what happens in the right wing happens along the continuum of these biases. That's why a coal company can say, "What about your job?" And the next thing you know, some guy's sitting there going, "Well, goddamn, we're going to go on food stamps, and the old lady won't be able to have her tanning bulbs next year, and hell, I may not be able to get a new pickup truck for 15 years instead of ever 5. Immediacy, right? But on the other hand, if you say to them, "What's going to happen when that dam up there breaks and 9.8 billion gallons of toxic waste roars down a river valley and kills every human being in it?" Well, that guy doesn't have the cognitive skills, and it's not because he's an idiot, it's because it's human. He doesn't have the cognitive skills to comprehend that much death in one place, even though with a little bit of work, he could go and learn about the Buffalo Creek disaster when 125 people were killed and thousands were displaced. But he can imagine the grief. That his family would experience if we were to take some sort of group action to keep tens of thousands of people whose grief he cannot comprehend from dying. And that's why talking about saving the planet gets lost on so many people. Save the planet? Hell, I can barely save myself. That's why talking to a teabagger or a right-winger or a libertarian or a birther or a deather or a tenther or a bircher or a booger-eater about 45,000 excess deaths from lack of health insurance coverage falls on deaf ears. Because it's not just falling on deaf ears, it's falling on an incapable brain. And yet our side continues to talk in those terms, while the other side gets real traction by talking about things that are absolute bullshit, like death panels, because all of a sudden it's granny. granny whose picture you can see in your head, that Obama, that Kenyan Muslim socialist usurper with a deep-seated hatred of white people, is going to come and smother in her bed. So maybe, thanks to Harry, if we keep some of this stuff in some part of our brains, we will eventually figure out a way to talk to the people that are going to die right alongside us. Maybe it's not, maybe the language we have to learn is the language of grief. Maybe that's what I was getting at the other night when I said that I want to find a way to talk to poisoned people about being poisoned and why, without regard to whether or not they've got an I Love Mountains sticker on their Subaru or a Friends of Coal sticker on their $60,000 pickup truck. Maybe that's the issue, right all the way down to the ground. And now it's time to get out of here, because I am reminded by Randy that we got 3.5 minutes to go in the program. Thanks for the help this evening. Thanks to Glenn and thanks to Sal for helping us get very, very close to our fundraising goal for the evening. We closed the program only $20 away from being even for the week. Thank you very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to everyone who keeps all of this going with your emails, your thoughts, the contributions that do keep this going, with your phone calls, your comments and posts to the Facebook page and Twitter. Thank you. I don't want to say joy or enjoyment or pleasure, but whatever goodness you get out of this, please understand that I get it in equal measure. I mean, I would never know anything about cultural biases if it weren't for an email that Harry took time to put together and make cognizable both to me and to you. With a caveat toward the usage of the word, there's a little bit of magic going on here. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, thanks to the men and women at Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.ORG. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.